Welcome to Teacher Tales, where the chalk meets the cheese. I'm Glenn Bryant, your host on this weekly podcast, here to share the fun, the fails, and the fantastic moments from classrooms everywhere. Whether you're an educator or you just love a good story, you're in the right place. Stick around, like, subscribe, and share. You don't want to miss a single laugh or lesson.
All right. Welcome to
Teacher Tales.
I'm here today with Hunter Cox. Hunter is a middle school teacher at Ardmore High School. One of the best teachers I've ever had the opportunity to work with.
Well, thank you.
Very happy that somebody recommended him to be the interview for today's Teacher Tales. Hunter, tell us about yourself and how you kind of got into education and your journey to get into education to start with.
Yeah, so I knew from a young age that this was a career that I wanted. My mom was a school teacher. Spent a lot of hours with her up at the school, and I just kind of saw the work that went into it and the joy that she got from seeing students grow. Now, she taught elementary, but I kind of always was drawn to that side of the job. And my granddad was an auto mechanics teacher at Hayleyville High School, so I'm third generation, and I don't plan on changing that. And I got two boys, and I'm not going to force them into it. But who knows? If they love people like we do, then it might be the same profession.
It is a people business.
Yeah.
I remember when we interviewed you, the people in the interview committee said, go tackle him in the parking lot and offer him a job right now. He's a keeper.
First interview and only interview. No regrets.
So why middle school? I know that when I was in the classroom, I loved that age group.
Yeah.
You know, elementary, you get a kid, you are a student, you can develop them and you see them grow. And in a year's time, they grow so much. Middle school, you wind up 140, 160 children, especially in your subject area. You wind up with that many kids in a classroom. And you seem to have chosen that. You seem to have levitated toward that.
Yeah, I think the biggest reason why I enjoy working with middle school is at that point, I feel like influentially, they're more malleable, kind of like metals and science, you know, like they're more easy to mold and shape as compared to a kid that is 17 or 18 and they're kind of stuck in their ways. Like we can kind of steer kids to the right direction. And I feel like there's no, you know, I mean, I know this sounds wrong, but I feel like I'm a person that's been called to do that, is to try to steer kids into the right directions in their life. And it's hard. And two, just the energy that kids bring at that age with a lesson. I could do the same lesson with 17-year-olds, and I could teach my tail off, and I could really try to have them working and work the crowd, but they're not going to get into it like middle schoolers are, and that's what makes it fun.
I do know this. You, unless you've changed since I've left Ardmore,
I haven't changed.
You know, there's, you may be up, you may be standing on a desk 1 minute teaching, and then them teaching each other a few minutes later. It's just a phenomenal thing to watch in your classroom. But the thing that I will forever remember you is you own the banana at the pep rally.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we don't want to lose.
So I just have to know and tell the audience. I know that this is the question that they really want to know the answer to. How much prep work do you spend with your kids getting them ready for pep rallies?
None. I say, look, let's just bring energy. Like if they're going to let us out of class, we're going to have fun. And I don't like to lose. And I know y'all don't either. So let's go have fun. And they just buy into it. And I sit right in the middle of all of them and I get them going and I manage their behavior at the same time. And if they're all engaged, then the behavior is not going to be a problem. So that's how I roll. That's how we do it in eighth grade.
And if you've never seen that, maybe I'll slide back up here one day when they're having a pep rally and get some video of that, because it's actually.
Come on, sit right with us. You can vlog the whole thing right there.
Yeah. I don't know if these old nerves are ready for that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, very good to have you here today. Yeah,
glad to be here. Thanks for asking.
Can't wait for the long form interview. All right, so we're back and we're going to do the long form interview. And I'll just run through these. I have eight questions. Pretty much questions stay the same each week. The answers always vary, but the questions pretty much remain the same. So number one, what's the most memorable moment a student made you laugh and how did that moment impact your teaching?
So this story is going to be mentioned at the end, I believe. Yeah. A story basically about that you're going to hear in a little while, and I'll just save that for that.
All right.
Does that work for you? Okay, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's going to be at the very end. Just stay tuned for the very last part.
Perfect. If you could give your younger teacher self, and I know 8 years is not an eternity, but if you're like everybody else, you try to gradually improve, and what advice would you give to your to an 8 year younger or 12 year younger, your younger teacher self, yeah, what advice would you give, and why did you choose that piece of advice?
So this question hits hard. I think there's really a lot of things that I would tell myself. I think the biggest thing is anyone who's seen me teach is I put a lot of energy into it, and I really care about my lessons and the outcomes that I get from my students. I think the reminder is that you don't have to be perfect. There's a lot of times that you feel like you got to be everything for everyone, but you got to realize at the end of the day, like, we're in a profession of building relationships, and sometimes the outcomes in class aren't always what you expect. The behavior's not always like you want it to be. So it doesn't have to be perfect. You just need to be the best version of you. And that's what I would tell the 23-year-old me the first year I started teaching, because I probably needed to hear that.
In motivational circles, they talk about that as being a massive, imperfect action. Mm. Just take action. Yeah. Move forward. What's the craziest thing that you've done to keep your students engaged? And then, more importantly, did it work?
Yeah, no. I can't think of anything crazy specifically that I've done, but I have, you know, people that want to see what's going on in my classroom. I take that as a compliment, because if they want to see me teach, I guess I'm doing something right. I think the craziest thing I do is not one thing, but it's a culmination of things. The great Jim Horn, Coach Horn, I don't know if he's watching this or not. I'll have to send it to him. But he taught me, he was my mentor at Athens. And like, my wife told me, like, when you teach, there's like marigolds. Like, she listens to a podcast, Cult of Pedagogy, and I've listened to it too, and it's great. She talks about marigolds in the podcast, and it's like, you have your teacher marigolds, like people you strive to be like. And when I saw him teach, I'm like, there's no one else I'd rather emulate in my career than him. Like, he's great. But he told me, he's like, teaching, especially middle school, is a lot like performing in a theater. He said, you got to learn when to crank up the volume and be loud and be goofy. And then you just get right in the kid's face. Just whisper right at him. And the kids, you just have them eating out of the palm of your hand when you teach like that. So I act things out. I'm goofy. There's a guy on YouTube. I teach ancient history, and his name's Mr. Nikki, and he makes rap songs about our content, man. I'll get up in front of the whole class, and I'll rap. I got a fake microphone. I got a rock star wig. I got a Mario hat and mustache. I got all sorts of goofy bag of tricks. I got a box in my room called Weird Stuff, and then I have a box under my desk called Weirder Stuff. And I just always pull something out of the bag of tricks, and kids are like, man, what are you doing? And I'm like, if I have them, like, you know, kind of enjoying it or even cringing a little bit, then I'm doing my job.
And it's not random, though. It's thought out. It's not just, you know.
Oh, I go to the party store, I'm like, I need that.
Yeah, but it's always in pursuit of your standard. When I would watch you perform your magic, it was always you knew what you were going to do, mm-hmm, but they didn't. And that was part of the, and it was always in pursuit of the goal of getting the,
it's all about engagement for me. They're locked in. I'm locked in.
And so the follow-up is that does it work? And the answer is unequivocally yes. Yeah. So the next one is kind of a personal question. How do you stay motivated on those days when things are not going like you expect?
So I just tell myself, like, when, and that happens, there's going to be for some teachers it's every day, for some teachers it's every week, for some teachers it's every month, but whenever that moment comes where I'm not motivated, maybe we're in the heat of basketball season, we're coming off a tough loss, or maybe you know, my lesson yesterday just flopped. Like, it worked maybe in the past with a different class period or a different group of kids, but it's not working with this group. I just remind myself, like, there's a reason I got into this career. You know, we hear that all the time at professional development, like, remember your why. And I'm like, I remember being 20 years old, sitting in a math class, you know, at Calhoun, and just thinking, it's going to be worth getting through this math class, because I do not like math. History teachers usually don't. it's going to be worth it when I get to the dream. Like, this is my dream, is to do this and to work local and to build myself in a community and invest in kids. And I'm like, maybe yesterday wasn't the day that I dreamed of, but I'm going to have a day sometime soon that is going to remind me why I did it. So I usually bounce back pretty quickly from those. I know some teachers don't, but just always remember your why, on why you want to do something.
Can you share a time when a student's success story, and this could be in the classroom or in coaching, because, you know, in coaching, it gets overlooked a lot of times, that the impact that you have as a coach is equally as important, sometimes more important because of the role model that you provide. But where a student success story reminded you of why you became a teacher?
Yeah, no, can't think of any specific students because, you know, I've had so many just good kids that I look now and they're so successful. But whether it's kids that, you know, you have in school right that moment that you know are going to go on and do great things, or the kids that you're kind of worried about, they're on the fringe of like, I don't know if they're going to finish high school. Don't see that as much in middle school, but especially when you see them in high school, you kind of see where they're going. You're like, man. But when you see those kids and they come up and tell you like, hey, like everything's good. I have a career. I'm starting a family. Found out my wife or whatever is expecting, or, you know, that they're expecting if it's a girl. You know, those moments make me happy when I see their lives are going well. And then they always put a little cherry on top of like, I want you to know you're my favorite teacher. Like that, that'll get me every time. That almost makes me want to cry right now. But it's like that right there. Like, it's a good feeling.
There you go. What's the funniest misunderstanding or miscommunication that you've ever had with a student?
So, there's always going to be miscommunications with students. Some of them are funny, like funny, and some of them are not. And looking back, it's funny because at the time it was rough, but I teach ancient history. And in the curriculum, like we have to study world religion. Well, we live in a community that is heavily Judeo-Christian. Like everyone is following, not everyone, but 75% of the people, they go home, they're going to pray before meals, or they're going to go to church, or they're going to proclaim that they believe in, you know, the God of Judaism and Christianity, right? And so I'm going to teach other religions. I tell the kids at the beginning of the year, I'm like, look, like, it's nothing personal. Like, I'm literally a preacher's kid. My dad's a gospel preacher, local town of Athens. And, like, believe me, I'm the last person who's trying to make your son or daughter a Buddhist or Muslim or whatever. Well, I had an issue one time where it was one of those days where I think there was a pep rally or something coming up, and the day was kind of botched, but I'm like, we're not losing a day. Like, I refuse to lose a day of school. And I'm like, well, I'll come up with something extra that just kind of builds on the curriculum that we're studying. So we're doing a study on Islam, and I said, well, this is a great time to maybe let them investigate the five pillars of Islam one more. You know, there's five things every Muslim's supposed to do, right? So I told them to kind of make a one-pager thing in which they would draw the pillars and kind of elaborate on what each pillar was about. Well, the student did not finish the assignment and they say, can I take it home? And I'm like, oh, of course, right? That's not a problem. Like that's fine. But I'm also thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm probably not going to grade this because it's just extra time. Anyways, maybe give them extra credit or drop their lowest grade, plug that in with a good grade, right? Well, anyways, later that night, I'm at church. It's a Wednesday night. Get an email from a local community member who was very upset that their child was learning about Islam. And I literally told him what I just said right here. Like, look, I'm not a Muslim. I'm not Buddhist. I'm not Hindu. I'm not anything. If anything, you should be worried about me trying to persuade your child to become, you know, a follower of Christianity, which I'm not doing that in class either. I understand there's a fine line there. And I think it's great that America has freedoms and we don't push that on people. I think everyone has their choice, right? But I was elaborating on all that. Well, then, you know, you get on Facebook, you look, my whole email has been screenshot and they have blurted out my name with the little crayon on, the photos. And it was kind of one of those things where I was like, well, shoot, well, at least they covered my name. And I look and it said 8th grade world history at the bottom, middle school boys basketball coach. I said, anyone who lives in Ardmore, Alabama knows and sends their kids here knows exactly who that is. Because at that point, I'd been teaching for a few years. Right. I'd been tenured. I was well respected by the kids and my colleagues at the school. I'm like, anyone who's friends with that person on Facebook just saw that. And I just had to kind of look and laugh. And I think I forwarded you on the email. I was like, hey, this is happening. I forwarded it to the counselors. Like, it's out of my control. I've told them what the standards are. I've told them my views. And I never held that against that student. Like, that's not the student's fault.
That's crazy.
And I even say this, it may not even be a parent's fault when that happens, because sometimes their understanding and worldview of the world is completely different than how I was raised. I was raised in a family in which, you know, my parents are very comfortable in me being exposed to things, you know.
Right.
And there's some families where that is not the case. So I think it's important to consider the demographic somewhat. That was the lesson for me that sometimes we're teaching. And also, I always start now with disclaimers when we do religion. Like, look, I will never be trying to convert you. Like, we're just trying to learn. We're trying to not to be lost about the world. So,
well, some people, like, you can't, you know, it's really hard. You can't, they don't make a magic pill for ignorance.
No.
And, so when you're in the education world and you're combating, and that's all you're doing is educating. That's all that is yeah. is the antidote for ignorance.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing that, I mean, it makes it tough.
It does.
Especially when they don't want to know anything different.
And that family, I see them in town, they're pleasant. It's just that one moment it's like,
and they've probably moved on and forgot about it and don't have it. They had no idea that they were,
they may not even know who I am. They just knew the history teacher was causing problems.
Yeah. Sir, next question is, how do you inspire students who are struggling both academically and personally?
I think the first part of that is needs to be addressed with the last thing you said. If we want to address their academics, we have to address them as a person, like at the end of the day, because if they don't care about us as a person, we don't care about them as a person, what are they going to care about? A math class or an English class or a history class or whatever. I think the main thing is to let the child know that, like, number one, like, whether you are the best student and you're going to win valedictorian, or whether you're the kid that we're going to drag across to the finish line and get them that diploma, like, I care about you. Like, I want to know what makes you tick. I want to know what you vibe with in class, what you don't vibe with in class, and try to help build you up. There's one trick that I also learned from the great Jim Horn, the guy who taught me how to teach. He does these cards at the beginning of the year, and it's so goofy. He'll get up on top of a desk, like first day of school, before he ever does anything. He says, I need guys over here. I need girls over there. And he gets them all in the corner. No, what's going on? And he stands on top of a desk and he says, pulls out his phone. Everyone say cheese. And he takes their pictures and they're like, what is he doing? He does the same. He's like, all right, you'll see those tomorrow. And then he'll literally cut out all the heads, glue them on all these note cards, put their names on them. And he says, all right, where's so-and-so at? Where's Johnny? Where's Billy? Where's Susie? Right? Find all their cards, and he gives them this list of things that he wants to know about them. And it's things like, okay, who do you live with? Because we don't consider that sometimes as teachers. Like, some kids' home life are just awful. And that's why I'm anti-homework. Like, you don't know what every kid's going through, and not everything's equal for all kids. But, like, I want to know, who do you live with? Do you live with two parents? You know? And not that it's a huge deal, but, like, is it a heterosexual relationship, homosexual relationship? Like, what is it?
And again,
and that gives you some insight.
No, yeah.
Grandma, grandpa, who do you live with?
And 99.9% of the time, the kid didn't choose that.
No, they
did
not.
It was chosen them for them by the adults in their life.
Aunt, uncle, foster, you know, that's important. And then you're like, okay, I'm starting to see some things now. And then who's your favorite teacher you've ever had? Even if a kid's from Wyoming, like, I still want to know who that is. And then I want you to tell me why you like them.
Why'd you pick Wyoming? I mean,
out of all the places. Well, I got some weird ones. I got some all over the place. I know I have none from Wyoming this year. So I was like, I don't want any kid to feel like I'm talking about it if they see this. But, you know, like, I want to know who it is and what made you actually like their class. And some people be like, so-and-so, because we didn't do anything in there. I'm like, well, that's not what I vibe with. Like, if that's what they're looking for, that ain't my class. Like, there's going to be days where they feel like they didn't do much because it was fun. But, like, there's going to be days where the work's going to be plenty. Like, but I just want to know. So I do that. I want to know their hobbies. I want to know if they do anything up the school. Are they in clubs? What's your favorite subject? I tell kids all the time, like, look, you don't have to say history. I'm not going to judge you. You don't have to say I'm your favorite because you don't even know me yet. Like, please don't say that. So things like that just help me build the relationships. And then just paying attention to the data and knowing what's coming in across my grade book. Like, who is actually on the fringe? Am I seeing trends? Am I seeing their demeanor in the hallway change? And trying to stop things like that before it becomes too big of an issue. And we're in the ninth, the last 9 weeks, and kids are failing or their behavior has just fallen off a cliff, you know?
So your answer there, a long way around. So your inspiration is you get to know them.
Yeah. It's all about relationships. Like, this is a relationship business, whether it's with my colleagues or the students or the admin.
All right, and our final question in the long-form interview section is, if teaching were a superhero job, what would be your superpower, or what would your superpower be, and how would you use it in the classroom?
All right, so this one for me is pretty easy. I believe, and anyone who knows me will tell you, it's energy. I know you might be listening to this interview right now and you're just like, oh, well, I don't see the energy. It's because I'm it's Friday and I'm standing in front of sitting in front of a camera, and there's no reason for me to stand. But when I have a captive audience, you know, it's like, hey, this is the one chance for me to like really let my personality just own the room, you know? Like, I'm confident in my ability to entertain and to hold people's attention. So I'm like, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do it with energy. And there's some days where I don't have the energy, but good news is not every lesson has to be your top energy. But there's some lessons where you got to bring it. Like the guy student taught with, you know, he told me, like, it's a theater, man. Like, and if you're going to be in the theater, like, you got to bring the energy. So I'm all about it, whether I'm coaching, whether I'm teaching, whether I'm at a pep rally, whether I am, you know, making announcements over a microphone. It's something like, I'm going to bring energy. Like, that's what it's all about. And that's how I think, you know, a lot of teachers, we all have different superpowers, but that's how I use mine, is definitely with energy.
That's perfect. Thank you very much. That concludes our long form interview. We'll go right into story time.
Okay.
So now that we'll start with our segment called Story Time. So I'll just get Hunter to tell any pranks, any stories, any funny situations, tough times that he's, or not so much tough times, but story time is where you tell that one, or there's not really a question in the long form interview that covers that particular story. You have any, like, just stories? Just,
yeah, like nothing really tough or any pranks. Like, my kids know I'm not a big prankster. I like to joke around and have some friendly banter with the kids. If I know they can handle it, we always joke back and forth. They joke with me, I joke with them, but it's all in love and care. We like each other. But probably the funniest story I can think of actually happened 2 years ago with two students that I highly respected. It was really funny. So I get up in the morning. I'm not a big breakfast guy. Like, my wife's out the door, I'm out the door. We got kids now, so it's like I'm not sitting down and eating breakfast like I should. But what I do is I will sometimes, like, grab something on the way out the door and eat it. Well, that morning, I literally, and you probably see this, is going, I ate a chocolate chip granola bar. And when I ate it, sitting in my truck, driving down the road, and I'm eating, and I'm like, I lost part of that chocolate granola bar. Like, where did it go, right? Where did it go? And I'm like, I guess it's down in the seat somewhere, you know, whoever makes these vehicles, they don't understand. No one's hand can fit down in the cracks. So I'm looking, I'm like, well, there's something down there. Maybe that's it. So I get up, I go about my business. I get up, I go and teach, right? And the whole class, the kids are just acting weird. It is like the weirdest vibe. It's an interactive lesson. I noticed that every time I'm looking for feedback from the kids or asking questions, trying to be engaged with them, this was a good class, a really, like, one of those classes you look at the end of the year where you're like, that's my favorite. You know, it's one of those type of classes. I'm like, what is up? At least two kids walk up to me in the class, all classes gone by, and say, Coach, I'm not trying to be rude. There's something black, like, on your butt, right on your butt. And I'm like, I don't even look. I say, that's where the rest of my granola bar went. So then this was when we were on a rotating RTI schedule too, where you see different kids. And they came back in the next day. And I was like, what were y'all thinking? Like, y'all let me teach all class with that on my tail. Like, what are y'all doing? And they were like, Coach, we just didn't want to embarrass you. I said, it's more embarrassing for me to walk around like that all day.
Yeah.
I said, now these two guys, I vibe with them. And in front of everyone, I gave them both Cox Cash. If you've heard of Cox Cash is an extra credit system I do. And I cannot take credit for it. A lot of teachers do it, but I learned it from the guy student taught with. He had his own thing. And I was like, well, my name's perfectly alliterative for that, so we're gonna do Cox Cash. So he had something else because his last name was different, but I was like, that's cool, kids love it. And I rewarded them for just being decent people in that moment.
So what you're saying is friends don't let friends teach half
a
day with
they were my basketball kids too. I don't think they wanted their basketball coach coaching on the sideline with chocolate on his rear. So, you know, it's funny, the kids were, you know, laughing about it after that. I said, I had to call my wife, we're gonna bring me new pants, like I'd use the bathroom on myself. I'm like, what are y'all doing?
In middle school.
Yeah, I gave them a hard time about it. I didn't let them live it down.
That middle school, I loved middle school. I taught middle school for 5 or 6 years myself, and I loved, but it's something about, like, age 11, maybe middle of the 11-year-old age. It's like they lose their brain, and all the hormones kick in, and they get their brain back probably middle of 50, but they can't help it. They just say whatever. Yeah. So for the fact that they, you know, they sit there and didn't, it just tells you what great kids are here at Ardmore High School. Yeah.
Good kids.
And you had a class full of them.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah. That's one thing that when you sent that, I said, I know the only story I can tell right here is this. That trumps everything. That's
and
the rook card.
And so how long have you been in this?
Education. This is my eighth year. All eight have been in Ardmore. This is my first interview. And it's, I tell people all the time, like, as long as things stay the same in the way, you know, that works for me and my family, it's the only place I want to be.
It's a great place to be. Thank you for being with us today. Yeah. And we'll see you next week on Teacher Tales.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Teacher Tales. If you are inspired, motivated, or just had a good laugh, be sure to subscribe and share this podcast with your friends. And if you know a good teacher who has a story to tell, I'd love to hear from them. Send me an email at motivatedinspiration@gmail.com with your suggestion. Remember, whether you're in the classroom, at home, or out in the world, keep spreading the joy of learning. Until next time, keep those stories alive.